Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Desperate House Witches. My name is Raina Starr. Dorian Wallace has the night off. It is the first Friday of the month, and you know what that means. It is politics night. But before we launch into it, we must thank our sponsors, The Angry Cauldron at www.theangrycauldron.com, purveyors of fine pagan goods, and their sister company, The Eclectic Candle Company. You can get 25% off your first order with the discount code TACVIP. Very excited about that. They've got candles, incense, soaps, and more. May is their month of Dorothy. That would be Dorothy Morrison. Speaking of Dorothy Morrison, we'd like to thank our other sponsor, www.wickedwitchstudios.com, the amazing Dorothy Morrison, who is having an amazing media-only sale right now. Check it out on Facebook and her shop. It's fabulous. We love our Dorothy. But without much further ado, I have to say, you all know the drill. It is not a G, PG, G, or X, R, or anything else rated show. So if dirty talk, bad language, and other things might offend you, you may not want to listen in, but if you're willing to stay, we're happy to have you. Again, tonight's guest, the one, the only, the pagan pundit himself, the amazing Talzin Govanin. Talzin,
Hey, how's it going?
What is going on? So happy to talk to you tonight.
Oh, it's fun. I mean, it's such a grand time when the people who you're working to defeat are spending their time practicing getting in circular firing squads and aiming at their feet. It's a lot of fun. Now, before we get on tonight, I just want to give just a moment of remembrance out there for Celeste Helseb, a Llewellyn author and a Facebook friend of mine. I never got to hang with her in life, but I interacted with her a lot online, and she was always a real sweetheart and always willing to lend her experience and her expertise. And Celeste passed away a couple nights ago in her sleep, so we're sending out energy to her and to her family. So
absolutely
right. So now on to more fun stuff, like how many ways can Donald Trump's legal team fuck up? That's when I was talking to you, when I sent you that message, I said, oh, yeah, we're going to be talking about the gift of incompetence. That's really,
yeah.
I mean, I've been watching, you know, I watch MSNBC, I watch Rachel Maddow, I watch Lawrence O'Donnell. I even watch Morning Joe because it's always fun to see Mika get pissed off at something Trump does. But I've been seeing this guy on there, and if you watch TV news, you've seen him too. His name's Michael Avenatti. He's the lawyer for Stormy Daniels. And this guy is a fucking virtuoso in dealing with Trump at his own game. He's laid trap after trap. Trump has stepped into each and every one. He's working on getting Trump under deposition. It's looking like it's going to happen, depending on which civil suit it happens under. And, you know, and the thing is, the guy just talks about how he never, I mean, the guy's been in law for a long time. He's tried cases. He's worked cases as a plaintiff and as a defendant, all kinds of civil suits, all kinds of cases. He's never had a case where the other side's legal team just keeps fucking up this resolutely, this just, you know, haphazardly. And I mean, we all owe the fact, and really what it comes down to is that Trump can't get good lawyers. People have talked about how he finally got a decent lawyer with the guy who worked on Bill Clinton's impeachment defense in the 90s. And excuse me. Now, and this guy does seem to be like a decent legal. However, who knows how long he's going to be on there? Because literally, the day the guy shows up for work at his new job of defending the president, and let me tell you, Donald Trump just hired a guy whose specialty is defending presidents in impeachment proceedings. I wonder if he's seeing writing on the wall, too. But I digress. This guy comes on the job, and what does he see? He sees Rudy fucking Giuliani, Mr. Noun, a Verb, and 9/11 himself, going on the Sean Hannity show and basically sticking a grenade in the entire Trump legal strategy with the Stormy Daniels case and pulling the pin. And, you know, and the fact that he was on Fox and Friends the next morning only digging the hole deeper makes you think he pulled the pin and then just stood there to see the pretty light show. But it's just incredible. I mean, every single story they've given, they walk back on. There's nobody in Washington who's willing to go to the mats for, you know, there's really nobody in Washington who wants to really go to the mats for Donald Trump unless they're a fucking moron like Jim Jordan. But because every time you go out there to defend the guy, he turns around sometimes less than 12 hours later and says, nah, you know what? It was really something else. I mean, there's just no way that anybody can ever pick a consistent story and stick to it, because the guy at the center of things has the attention span of the dog from Up. You know, it's like a squirrel, but excuse me.
Well, yeah, I heard Emmett. Oh, you're fine.
Oh, no, go ahead.
I was just going to say, you know, there was a whole lot of fanfare when they said Emmett Flood was coming on board because, and, you know, it kind of cracked me up how, you know, Trump can't stand Hillary Clinton, but goes after, you know, goes to use the Clinton lawyer. And the thing that struck me was, the first report after Rudy's showing on Hannity was that, you know, everybody was saying, oh, no, this was all confirmed with Trump's team. Come to find out in retrospect that, no, this was just a plan between him and Trump, between he and Trump, rather, for Rudy to go on and talk. And, I mean, Emmett Flood must be losing his mind, because this is probably the best lawyer Trump's ever had, certainly the most sober, certainly the one who is most in touch with the rule of law. So this is just amazing to me that it goes so far off the rails, and 24 hours later they're trying to walk it back, and it's like, oh, no, we don't buy any of this shit. And I think the American public, or I hope the American public, is starting to wake up to this. I'm talking about Trump supporters specifically.
Yeah.
I know it's a long, hard slog with some of them, but I'm hoping the more reasonable ones are going, oh, yeah, maybe this is a bridge too far.
Well, you know, I mean, of course, you got to remember, the people who are still with Trump right now are probably the people who are thinking that the black, gay, liberal feminists are the ones who are behind all this. So you never do know. I mean, we do still have a flat earth society after all. But the thing is that I could see instantly when I saw the tape, and I was watching, watching this on my computer, because of course I don't have cable, but the MSNBC site has every relevant segment of Rachel and Lawrence and all that. I just watched it the next day. But when I watched Rudolph Giuliani, I knew what he was trying to do. He was trying to create some sort of excuse as to why Michael Cohen's payoff to Stormy Daniels wasn't a campaign law violation. Because of course, the old conventional logic was saying that if Michael Cohen spent this money in an attempt to prevent the story from getting out and affecting the election, that it could be considered an in-kind contribution and right. which would be illegal because it was never reported. The thing is that by saying what he said, and, you know, and Giuliani even pressed that by saying there was no campaign finance law violation or anything like that. The problem is that the excuse he gave and the detail that he gave really yep. opens up so many other places, so many other avenues of possible criminal liability for Michael Cohen and Donald Trump. I mean, before, under their old story that Michael did this on his own and Trump didn't know about it, but Michael did it out of loyalty for his boss and his boss's family, then it would have just been Michael Cohen who was having some sort of legal liability. But the thing is, by right. saying that not only that Trump repaid him, that makes it a loan, and even a loan during a campaign is something you have to declare, which, of course, puts the Trump campaign on the legal hook for that. But the way that they did it, this idea that Trump was paying Michael Cohen so many thousands of dollars a month, and that money went into like a slush fund that Michael Cohen could use to pay settlements out to people alleging improper behavior. And really, that right there is a big story. That's a story that I really hope penetrates in the heartland, that Donald Trump had so many women saying that, oh, yeah, I totally fucked the guy. There are so many of them that he didn't handle them on a case-by-case basis. He set up a standing slush fund that they could just dole yep. out checks from to handle this stuff. And let me tell you, I mean, you know, when you say, you know, they say, oh, there's no basis to these allegations, or there's no basis to allegations, you don't have a $400,000 slush fund set up right. to take care of them. But also the problem is that these payments from Trump to Michael Cohen were set up as if they were legal fees, like a retainer. But the thing is, a retainer for a lawyer is something that's very, very specific. There are yeah. laws in every state that dictate what a retainer can be used for. And really, for people who don't know, they may have heard the phrase, but a retainer, if you got a lot of legal work to do, and people, you know, rich people, people who run big companies and all that, there's a lot of legal work going on, even if it's just having lawyers going over the contracts they write just to make sure they're on the up and up. But if you pay your lawyer retainer every month, and they put that into a client's fund that they have there as part of their business, and then whenever that law firm does work for the client, they write up a bill, send a copy to the client, but of course mark it paid in full, because then they just take their payment out of the retainer. That's what a retainer is for. It's not to set up a secret slush fund to use to pay off porn stars, basically. But the other thing that Rudy Giuliani has just opened up Michael Cohen and Donald Trump to is the fact that by making these payments to Cohen's law firm for something that is not for legal fees look like legal fees, and the fact that they're transferring yeah. this money from bank to bank, that right there yep. implicates them in bank fraud and wire fraud. And
wow.
it's hard. And also, ultimately, their whole attempt to try to distance this Stormy Daniels payment from the campaign failed. And I watched it fail in real time. I was watching Michael Avenatti on Lawrence O'Donnell. I watched it this morning, but it aired last night. And Michael Avenatti right. came out and said that he has evidence, hard evidence, that Stormy Daniels' last attorney, the one that was colluding with Michael Cohen to screw over his clients and is going to soon face some very nasty legal issues in California, I think his last name is Davidson, that Cohen and Davidson passed messages back and forth talking about how they had to get this NDA signed before the election. That was their paramount purpose. They have to get it signed before the election. That communication between those two men, you know, should Avenatti's claim pan out, and I have no reason to believe it won't, that means that they have direct evidence that they did structure this payment to make sure it was going to help them in the election, which does turn it into a campaign contribution. And the fact that Michael Cohen is not allowed to donate $130,000. The only person who can donate $130,000 to their campaign at one time is the candidate themselves. That's why so many other people set up super PACs, because they can't take the big checks. But $2,700 is the limit for an individual to give to a campaign. So Cohen's already over the barrel there. But the fact that this was coordinated to make sure it happened before the campaign, and that Mr. Avenatti has this information, is just completely sinks them. It completely sinks them, because then it does become a campaign contribution. And then you have evidence to commit further bank fraud and wire fraud by, again, hiding the nature of these payments. So Rudolph Giuliani, he opened his mouth and stuck at the feet of every single lawyer in Trump's employ in his mouth at one time. And the hell it is that they're trying to cut Michael Cohen loose because they know he's going to flip on them. And that's another thing that I just find so absurd. I've followed politics for a long time. And I mean, I'm used to, you know, when things happen in the past, like someone close to a politician gets in trouble, usually that politician will say things like, well, you know, I'm sure that, it's like, oh, I had nothing to do with this. I had no idea. And if they ask, are you afraid this person's going to talk? It's like, well, they can talk all they want. I didn't do anything wrong. No, what Trump's talking about constantly is whether or not Cohen's going to flip. Well, let me tell you something. You can't flip on somebody who hasn't done anything wrong, because, you know, there's nothing to flip. There's no information to give them. So the fact that Trump is out, and let's face it, everybody who knows anything about New York real estate knows it's a shady fucking racket. International real estate development is a shady fucking racket. And all along, when I heard people during the campaign say, well, Trump is a businessman, it's like, no, he's a real estate developer, which is one notch above organized crime. They just keep everything above the books, but they still break plenty of laws and bribe and deal with the mob and do all kinds of shit. And Cohen has been Trump's attorney for over a decade, something like 13, 14 years, during which time Trump was trying to expand his business all over the world, trying to slap his name on buildings all over the world. And if you think New York real estate is shady, Indonesian real estate is 1,000 times shadier. Anytime you go to an extremely poor country economically, there's a lot of corruption because, you know, people with money can buy off politicians and civil servants, because civil servants, if you don't think they make a lot of money in the U.S., they make jack shit in Southeast Asia. Okay, so there's a lot of corruption. There's a lot of double dealings. As a matter of fact, Rachel Maddow just last week pulled out a bit of video from when Donald Trump signed his whole non-competition pledge with the Republican Party, pledging to support the nominee, whoever that was. And then he stops at the end of his press conference and brings this guy up, who he says is the Speaker of the House in Indonesia. And, you know, he's a big, important guy, and he's here to talk to Trump and yada, yada, yada. And Trump was working on getting a Trump Tower in the Indonesian capital at the time. But this guy, who Trump pulls in front of the cameras, you know, very awkwardly, I should say, this past week, was just sentenced to jail for corruption. So this, you know, the people that Trump was doing business with in these countries over and over again, if there's a corruption scandal, they're in the middle of it. I mean, one thing you got to say, when Donald Trump deals with shady characters, he only deals with the top shady characters. Okay, he only deals with the most important shady characters. He's not going to deal with some heroin dealer in Jakarta. No, he's going to deal with the guy fucking bleeding the government dry. Okay, so and you know what I find so funny is, with all this stuff going on, the fact that Michael Cohen is going to, I mean, Trump was already treating him like shit anyway before the guy got raided. But when I think about Cohen flipping on Trump, and I think about all these shady business dealings going down, I just remember back during the campaign when Donald Trump is saying, hey, you're going to get so – we're going to win so much, you're going to get tired of winning. And that's not going to say. I'm not tired of winning yet. I mean, whether it's the Pennsylvania special election or the Alabama special election, I'm not tired of winning yet. I don't know about you guys. There's another thing that I want to talk about with Michael Avenatti. This guy, the lawyer for Stormy Daniels, or I should say Stephanie Clifford, because that's her actual name, but I think it's so funny to see, you know, CNN loves to put pictures of Stormy Daniels on screen wearing her boob shirts or her boob dresses. You know what I'm talking about. The ones that are like, take a look at those outfits. And they really love that. And it's hilarious, too, because I was watching Stephen Colbert, and he even riffed on that. But the thing is that Michael Avenatti has been making predictions, and every one of them has come true. And he's predicted that Michael Cohen's going to get indicted, and it hasn't happened yet. But let me tell you something. You don't get a federal judge to sign off on a warrant, a search warrant, to come in and seize property from a lawyer unless you've already got a shit ton of evidence that that you can build a solid case. But the one thing that Avenatti has said is he's predicting that Donald Trump is not going to finish out his term. And this is, I think, the most ironic thing about it. I think Avenatti's right, and I think Avenatti's right that it's ultimately his case, the porn star case, that brings Donald Trump out of office, because it was the Stormy Daniels case that got the feds looking at this as a possible campaign funding violation. And then they started uncovering a rat's nest of illegal shit that Cohen was involved in. And now they've raided his office and carted away like 17 phones. I mean, the guy never got rid of cell phones. So all of his text messages going back a decade, the government has them now. But it was really the Stormy Daniels case that caused Michael Cohen to ultimately get raided. They weren't raiding it on behalf of the civil case, but the civil case raised questions, and good federal prosecutors are going to say, well, let's look and see if any federal law was broken. And they start looking and going, oh, shit, there's a lot of illegal shit going on here. We better get search warrants. We better get warrants to read this guy's email and that kind of stuff. We better get a warrant to see who he's calling and when and who's calling him. I mean, again, they've uncovered a lot of shit. But when you think about it, I think what's going to happen is that Cohen is going to flip. He's going to flip on the whole fucking family. And he's going to start singing. Yeah. And he's going to start singing about so many different things that literally Donald Trump could see his entire family get locked up. Even if he holds on in the White House, he could see all of his kids, except for Barron, get locked up. And Barron's just too young to have gotten in on the graft and corruption game yet. And and Giuliani's already signaling that they're willing to sacrifice Jared Kushner to save Ivanka.
He's disposable.
And the thing is that he better watch out because, again, Jared Kushner is the man whose father hired a prostitute to seduce his brother-in-law to try to blackmail him out of testifying against him. And so, I mean, Jared's dad showed his own sister videotape of her husband with a hooker just to try to fuck up his life and to keep him from testifying. So if Giuliani thinks that Jared is going to go down without dragging anyone and everyone around him down with him, he's fucking dreaming. Jared will hold on to everybody. He will pull everybody down with him. And
including
Ivanka, because it's hardball. I mean, if his dad was willing to do that to his dad's own sister, especially if Ivanka freezes him out, especially if Daddy and Rudy decide that they're going to hang Jared out to dry and Ivanka doesn't do anything to stop them, he'll take her down. He will. Jared is just like his father, Charlie Kushner. They have no personal morals except for every man for himself. And the thing is that I can still see. Now, I think that Donald Trump would let Eric go up the river. I think he would let Don Jr. go up the river. But I really believe that if things start to narrow in and people start getting indicted and people start getting arrested, I think Donald Trump would walk in to the Bob Mueller special prosecutor's office or have Bob Mueller come and see him and say, listen, if you can take everyone else, prosecute everyone, I'll testify against them, but you let my daughter go. And if you do, I resign. I get out of here. And Mueller knows everything he's done. Mueller knows all of the connections with the Russian government and the treason and the Espionage Act violations. He may not have all the documentation he needs to prove it all yet, but it's pretty fucking plain. I mean, if journalists can put it together, you know, Bob Mueller's put that shit together. And I think Bob Mueller is enough of a patriot to say, you know what? We'll let the blonde girl go. We'll let the blonde lady go. We'll let her go and raise her tits and all that. But, you know, and we'll get this guy out of the Oval Office, basically, this dangerously unhinged man. And I think that ultimately the Stormy Daniels case, because of the light it shined on Michael Cohen, could wind up getting rid of Trump long before Mueller finishes the Russia probe. Just because the Southern District of New York does not fuck around. They don't have to worry about going through, about dealing with Congress. The Southern District of New York moves fast and they move concisely. And so they've got the full support of Rod Rosenstein behind them. So you bet they're going to move quickly on Cohen. And I mean, they took 8 cases of hard documents out of Cohen's place and they've already scanned and cataloged 7 of them. So they're moving right along here. So I really think that you could wind up seeing, and you know, the hell of it is that, you know, I don't buy porn. You know, I'm a modern American man. If I want to see a picture with some naked boobs, I'll just open my eyes at Starwood. But, you know, that's another matter altogether. But you know what? If this Stormy Daniels, Michael Avenatti case really does drive Donald Trump from office, I'm going to go buy one of her fucking DVDs. I will. I'll buy one of her fucking DVDs, and I'm going to donate it to the Library of Congress and say this is – a memorial to the woman who saved the Republic, a porn star. Yeah. So.
Oh, yeah, I'm one of her biggest fans now. I'm absolutely one of her biggest fans.
Yeah, oh, yeah. I mean, Stormy Daniels, Karen McDougal, I mean, these are women who are heroes on par with the women who stood up to Bill Cosby, who also got fucking nailed, thank fucking God, finally. But I'll tell you, it's just, you know, it's like, and the thing is, though, like I said, if you ever get a chance, if people out there haven't watched him, watch Michael Avenatti on cable news. The guy is good, and he's really good at getting under Trump's skin because he talks to him in the way he knows he understands. Short words, monosyllables, and lots of fucking bravado, basically. And, I mean, he'll call him out. He'll just be like, you know, Donald Trump is too much of a coward to engage us. And you know that's just got to rankle him. That's just got to. And the thing is, though, the minute he called into doubt any part of Stormy Daniels' story, boom, defamation lawsuit, which is another chance to get to depose President Trump under oath. And, you know, when you're doing depositions, that's tricky because I've watched videotapes of Donald Trump giving depositions. And the guy's not good. He's not a good witness. He's not, because he's too stream of consciousness. And, and I'll tell you, I really hope that we get this Donald Trump questioning with Bob Mueller soon, because when I read those 49 questions that Trump's own lawyer put together and then leaked, Jay Sekulow, I look at those questions, I'm just thinking, oh, my God, there is no way that this guy is going to be able to answer these questions without implicating himself in other crimes. Just because the guy is not fucking disciplined. He doesn't know how to stay on message. He doesn't know how to keep things stable. He runs on and on with this stream of consciousness stuff. And his consciousness is kind of, shall we say, messy. So I was reading those questions just thinking, oh, my God, every one of these questions could have 20 follow-ups. And it all depends on how he answers. And the hell of it is that those questions were leaked by – they say it was somebody outside the Trump legal team. Well, you know, John Dowd, who was at the meeting where the questions were written down, he's now outside of Trump's legal team. So But, you know, so it's obviously they leaked that stuff themselves. And, again, you have to wonder why. Because they only fucked themselves. I mean, their old liner said, oh, there's no questions on collusion. There's like a dozen questions on collusion. And some of the other questions
exactly.
that aren't directly about collusion are about people like Mike Flynn, who is, you know, Mr. Collusion City, who, again, is also cooperating. That's another thing to remember. Not only is Mike Flynn cooperating, but Rick Gates, Paul Manafort's old business partner, he's flipped and he's talking to the prosecutors. Papadopoulos, who is the first guy that the Russians reached out to on the Trump campaign for collusion, he's talking to the feds. And the fact that they keep asking for extensions for Papadopoulos and Mike Flynn's sentencing days show you that they're still singing and they're still getting information out
yeah.
of these guys. So, I mean, it's, you know, it's fascinating to watch. And again, the fact that these guys keep making these mistakes. I mean, when they were trying to put the White House physician, Ronny Jackson, in charge of the VA.
Oh, that was a disaster and a half.
It was a disaster, and you can see exactly how it happened. Because most, you know, the last couple of friends, you know, Ronny Jackson was a White House physician for George W. Bush and Barack Obama. They both liked him personally,
right.
but, you know, they only ever interacted with the guy when they were getting their checkups and all that stuff. They didn't see the way he ran the place. So, but personally, they liked him, and Trump liked him too. In fact, the guy, now it looks like the White House doctor, Ronny Jackson, let Trump write his own medical evaluation because a lot of the same language that
yeah.
was in Dr. Borstein's letter that the doctor now says Trump dictated. It's the same language in both fucking letters. But anyway, Trump liked the guy. And he's just like, hey, we need a VA secretary. Hey, you're in the military. I like you. I'll nominate you. At that point, Dr. Jackson should have said, oh, no, sir, please. I do not want to be considered for this. Because, again, when you're going to go up for confirmation hearings, you know, it's like running an election. It's like John McCain described it as getting a full body scan and cavity search daily. And the guy had to know. I mean, of course, the guy seems to be a blowhard and a complete asshole, so they're usually the least self-aware. But God damn it. You know, did he really think that all these stories of him mistreating people in the White House medical unit was just going to, like, not come up? But here's another example of somebody who comes close to Trump and gets destroyed. I mean, the guy had been the White House doctor for the past two presidents. He had a great reputation
oh, yeah.
on the Hill. There was some internal
yeah.
stuff that was going on, but generally the guy had a great rep. And now he doesn't even have that job anymore. He's left that job. He's being reassigned by the Navy. And he's probably being reassigned
yep.
to stacking Band-Aids you know, in the infirmary at Fort Meade or something like that. So, again, you know, it's they lose people so fast and they can't get people to replace them, which, of course, increases the chaos and increases the inability of the administration to get anything done. And that's a very good
right.
thing because a lot of the things that they want to do are very, very bad. So, as I said before, this is the gift of incompetence. They don't know what the fuck they're doing. And they are running up against people who really know what they're doing. And,
yeah.
you know, Michael Avenatti knows what he's doing. Bob Mueller knows what he's doing. So, you know, it's really they're bringing crayons to a gunfight. And it's so much fun to watch. It's just so nice when your supervillains are just stupid. You know, it's just kind of like they're not Bond-level supervillains we have these days. I mean, the level of supervillain was if you cast Jim Varney, the Hey Vern guy, the Ernest goes to prison guy, you know. That's what
yeah.
you would have as far as that level goes. Hey.
Unbelievable.
Just saying hi to my wife. She just came in.
Hi there. Hey, Miss
okay.
Willow.
Oh, the internet says hi there. Oh, God. But, yeah, you know, and let me tell you something else, too. I was a real fan of the way James Comey handled himself in the 2016 presidential race, and I still disagree with some of the stuff he did. But, oh, my fucking God, you have to read his book. You have to read his book. Because the one thing that everybody always said is that, you know, James Comey will screw up, but he'll do so from a point of, you know, if he makes a mistake, he does it based on his principles and not because he's trying to, you know, pull a fast one. And it's pretty evident that we're hitting a renaissance time right now of incredible political books. And James Comey's is unbelievable. So, I don't know, did you see him on Stephen Colbert? Oh,
I don't watch Colbert because I'm dead asleep at that hour.
Well, you know what? Most people don't watch Colbert when he airs. No, you got to watch him on YouTube the next day because then you could see the whole 30-minute interview and not just the 10 minutes they put on air of the coming interview. But
interesting.
It's great. I watched Comey for the full hour on Rachel Maddow. I watched him for the 30-minute on – actually, it was after watching him on Rachel Maddow, I decided, fuck it, I just got to get this book. And I got the Kindle copy of it. And, I mean, he talks about working with Rudy Giuliani. Rudy Giuliani was the U.S. attorney in the Southern District of New York when James Comey went to go work for the federal prosecutor's office there. And he talks about how the guy is such an egomaniac. And the guy has a very top-down – dictatorial style of running things, and you realize that's really why he gets along with Trump so well. They're basically cut out of the same cloth. They both consider themselves emperors of their realm, and they're just, you know, people told James Comey very early on that the most, you know, if you want to commit suicide, stand between Rudy Giuliani and a TV camera, and he'll run right over you together. Oh, yeah, total grandstanding. Nobody and everybody there was kept in their place because Rudy didn't want anybody looking too good to take the attention away from him and all that stuff. So really take, you know, when you look at the way the guy operates and his sheer ego and the fact that when he was a U.S. attorney, he had a staff of professional, capable people around him making him look good. Now you realize that all he's got is the Donald, and you can see why he's fucking up. Yeah. You can see why he's making so many mistakes because the guy's just, you know, the guy's just not very smart. He used to be a decent lawyer, but his years in the wilderness and frothing at the mouth on the campaign trail, I think Rudy's losing it.
Well, a lot of people have said that, and, you know, bringing it back to Rudy, you know, you mentioned we were talking earlier about his appearance on Hannity and how all of this ties back to the campaign. Rudy tied back to the campaign himself when he said, could you imagine if this had come out October 15th,
right.
You know, just before the
right.
election? I mean, so you don't even need breadcrumbs at this point. He has led you there. He has walked you away from it, and then he brought you back to it. So it was incredible incompetence. I mean, the likes of which I have never seen.
Not just that, but another thing you find out when you watch the Comey interviews or read the book is the fact that those cute little stunts that Rudy Giuliani was pulling on Fox News towards the tail end of the campaign saying, oh, there's going to be a big surprise coming up. You know, guys, sharpen your pencils because you're going to take notes. There's a big surprise coming up. And then it's announced that the FBI has reopened the email investigation. And then they bring him back on Fox News. They're like, is that what you were talking about? He goes, well, yeah, that's exactly what I was talking about. Basically, that means that there are people in the FBI somewhere leaking information to a surrogate for the Trump campaign. And James Comey immediately ordered an investigation to find out who leaked it, how, and, you know, and exactly how much they had given away. Now, James Comey got fired before that investigation finished, but it continued. So we could be looking at you could wind up seeing Rudy in the news again in the next 4 to 6 weeks when this Inspector General report comes out on finding the people who leaked that info to Rudy. And, you know, again, there's are more people that are just going to wind up getting destroyed because they got too close to the Trump orbit. So, but yeah.
Everybody gets destroyed. Everything he touches. Everybody, everybody he touches, something tragic happens to. It's almost without fail, and it doesn't seem to be getting any better. And the fact that they, you know, but here's what really disturbs me. When Trump came out today to address the press and talk about, you know, well, you know, Rudy just started yesterday. First of all, anybody who's had half an ear open knows that Rudy has been tied to the Trump campaign since the beginning. And even though he may not have been on staff for all of it, he was on staff as of 2 weeks ago. So the idea that Rudy just popped up out of nowhere yesterday and spout, by the way, this stuff with Hannity happened, was it yesterday or the day before?
Yesterday he was going on Fox and Friends to dig the hole deeper. So,
right. So, you know, he just started yesterday is such a lie. Anybody with any eyes at all, you know, knows that that's a lie, that he's been back officially on staff for at least 2 weeks and unofficially probably the last month. That's that part of it. The fact that Trump could come out today and try to walk it all back is astounding. It's just like any time somebody says something and then there's fallout afterwards, Trump goes on the next day and tries to walk it all back. What bothers me are the people that are going to say, oh, well, he walked it back. No big deal. That's what
disturbs me. And you didn't even walk that
much
back.
There are people doing I mean, and you know, even Cavuto, Neil Cavuto from Fox, issued a blistering takedown of Trump today. You know, it's in print somewhere. I didn't get to read it all, but it just astounded me that even now parts of Fox are turning on this presidency, and it gave me hope. It was the one thing that gave me hope, because that's the only thing Trump supporters that I know of actually watch. They watch Fox.
And the thing is, too, is that, well, one of the things is that Trump has tied himself so strongly to Sean Hannity, who, while a ratings guy at Fox, is not popular in the organization. Most of the real journalists who work there, and there are some real journalists who work there very, very hard, they don't like Hannity because they see him as a pretty boy. He hogs the spotlight. He's not really a journalist. And the fact that he hogs so much of the spotlight and gets so much pay while the real journalists aren't really making that much compared to other people in TV news, they don't like Hannity. And the fact that Trump is Hannity's guy is doesn't really endear them further. I mean, but there is one group of people who Trump likes more than Sean Hannity, and that's the folks from Fox and Friends in the morning. And let me tell you, this whole thing with the spiraling out of control of the Michael Cohen, Stormy Daniels thing, it started from Trump himself. It started on Fox and Friends when he was talking about how, well, you know, Michael represented me in a certain matters, like this crazy Stormy Daniels thing. Michael represented me. That was the first hint that he had given that he had knowledge that stuff was going on. His story had always been all along. I had no idea that this Stormy Daniels woman even existed. Michael Cohen ran across her, and he took care of it. He never told me, and he wasn't really representing me. He was doing it as a friend, and yada, yada, yada. And like, oh, he represented me in that crazy Stormy Daniels case. That's when the spiral started. And in fact, Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels' attorney, was on Morning Joe when Donald Trump was on Fox and Friends. And you could see, if you look at, and it's all up on their website, it's on their playlist for Morning Joe, I suggest you check it out, because the glee on this man's face, it's like it's Christmas and Easter morning all wrapped up into one. And you know, and he, I love the way he tweaks Donald Trump by saying, you know, say, Mr. President, I think you and Rudy Giuliani should go on Fox and Friends for an hour every day It's the only way you're going to get your story out. You know, it's the only way. Yeah, it's the only way you're going to get your story out. But he just knows every time they open their mouths, it helps his case. But that's where it started. It started from Donald Trump himself. And again, he'll eventually decide he's got to throw Rudy under the bus because he does that with everybody eventually. But the thing is that it all goes right back to himself, to the fact that the guy just is incapable of following anybody's advice. And I mean anybody's advice. Even ideas he had, he goes back on eventually. So, yeah, it's like he said, oh, Rudy just started yesterday. Well, maybe he was also trying to distract from the fact that when Rudy got hired by good old Donnie there, that he said, I'm going to have this whole thing wrapped up in a couple of weeks. A couple of weeks from the time he was hired was yesterday. So, you know, maybe Donald's like, no, we're hitting the reset. You know, Rudy just started yesterday. He has another 2 weeks to try to finish this up. Although it's really funny, too, because when he's like, we're going to finish up wrap up the investigations in a couple of weeks. Well, you know, if him and Donald keep going on Fox and running their mouths, it could be over in a couple of weeks because you could have enough information that, you know, even the district attorney in the town in Barberton, Ohio is going to decide, I got to bring charges against these guys. This is the most wide open, easy shot I've ever had in my life. So,
well, it looks that way. That's for sure. I mean, when you hear that Bob Mueller has asked for 70 blank subpoena forms, 35 technically, because they're in sets. But even 35 is an incredible number. That's incredible number of subpoenas.
Yes, and one of them is probably going to have Donald Trump's name on it. So,
you don't think Trump is going to be able to worm his way out of sitting for an interview?
I don't, you know, he'll try. He'll certainly try. He'll use every legal avenue he can. But the thing is that there's already precedents in this case. The precedence was United States versus Nixon, and it was about the Watergate tape. Some people say, well, this is about testimony. That was about documents. It's still a federal subpoena. And the Supreme Court justices back in the 1970s wrote their decision very deliberately. And they wrote in that decision that no one is above the law, not even the president. And that is a legal precedent. And again, you know, the Trump people could try to say, well, you're going to be interfering with his time as commander-in-chief. But when you look at not only how much golf he plays, but how many hours a day he spends watching Fox News. And he also watches a lot of MSNBC. He watches Morning Joe every morning, even though he cannot stand Joe and Meek anymore. He still watches it because what the hell, they're talking about him. He's got to watch that. And so he watches shit ton of CNN and Fox. And he'll spend a half an hour on the phone, literally where the Fox and Friends hosts were having to shut him down because he wouldn't stop talking. I mean, usually when you get a president on the phone and you're running a news show, you're like, keep this guy talking for as long as you possibly can. But with Trump, they were like, well, I'm sure you've got – we could sit here and talk all day. And Trump's like, sure, we could. And you could hear it in his voice. He was really enjoying this. And they're like, but I'm sure you have a million things to do. It's just like, it's like when you get that drunk dial from a friend at 2 in the morning. You're like, well, I'm sure you got to get back to your party. Oh, yeah, right. We got to get back to the party, man. Can't you? You know, you just do that Jedi mind trick on them. You know, it's like what you want to have happen, but make them think it's their idea. And that's what, you know, all the Fox and Friends people were doing, and including Steve Ducey. I can't remember my pet names for the other two, but Steve Ducey is definitely a favorite. But the thing is that if you look, there was another thing Stephen Colbert did is he sped up the videotape of the people listening to Donald Trump talk, the Fox and Friends host. And you can see on their face, they have this look on their face of, holy shit, oh my God, is he really saying that? He sounds unhinged. They just look terrified. And you know, because he was saying a lot of shit that they knew was going to blow up. And, you know, they're like, there's one time that they didn't want to have the journalistic scoop because, you know, it's their guy. But they were just looking horrified for a good number of that. And I've seen them talk with him on the phone before. They're usually all smiles and sycophantic licking of bum holes and all that. But, no, they were rattled. And it's kind of fun to watch because I think it's the only emotion I've seen Steve Ducey give other than smugness in, like, years. So
that's funny.
No,
I'll
apologize for being a little scattered. I've been working on 5.5 hours of sleep for the last 3 nights, and I'm punchy right now. So if I seem to jump around a lot, it's just the sleep deprivation. I think I'm going to be going to bed at around 10 tonight. So
I understand. And listen, anytime you need to wrap up tonight, you're good. You just let me know. I just appreciate you being here.
Yeah, I know. And, definitely we should message back and forth because I've got an idea of a non-political show I could do with you guys sometime. But anyway,
awesome.
It all comes down to a workshop I'm developing for Starwood this year, and then I'm going to be giving other places on pagans and pop culture, which is one of my hobbies. I love looking at paganism and the occult in pop culture. But that's one thing. And the thing is, I also got to tell people real quick, since I'm taking a momentary mental caesura from the political stuff, I've been talking about getting my book out. I was going to be getting it out this past month, but I wound up having an incident with a leaky pipe leaving an inch of water in my basement. And
I remember.
Yeah, and I've been spending like weeks going through everything that got damaged because I had boxes of books and CDs, and not too many boxes got hit, but the ones that did get hit, there's a Philip Heffleton book that got lost, and I had to go through everything that was in any of the wet boxes to write it down for the insurance claim. And let me tell you, here's a little thing that I want to shout out to the people out there listening. If you've been in this game a while, if you've been in the whole witchcraft, paganism, occult game for a while, and you've been collecting some books, go through your books, look up how much they're worth. You might have some surprises. Okay. I mean, there's a book I have by Leo Martello. I've talked about it before. It's called Witchcraft, the Old Religion. I have a hardback copy, which is really hard to find. I had no idea that the cheapest price you could buy one for was $600.
Wow.
Yeah, and that's one of the books that got some water damage. So that was quite upsetting. I have a Ron Hutton book on the Druids that was never published in the U.S., and the cheapest price you can find for that is $780. For one in the condition that I've got, they're charging $2,000. So, you know, I'm going to be working over this next week, getting the book ready, sending it off to Dorian, letting her format it for Kindle for me, because I really don't need to learn a billion new skills. And, but then I am going to be going through the rest of my books that did not get damaged, and I'm going to be cataloging everything. I mean, I had one audio CD that I bought 30 years ago. No, not 30, more like 25 years ago. And this thing was a UK import. I paid $25 for it 25 years ago. And 25 years ago, $25 was really expensive for a single fucking CD.
Oh, yeah.
Cheapest price you can get that thing for now is $288 for a single audio CD.
Wow.
So, yeah,
wow.
So folks out there, go through your collectibles, you know, research how much they're worth, and the ones that make your jaw drop and go, oh, my God, protect them, you know, secure them, buy a lockbox, get,
insure
you know, get plastic
them.
Wrap, yeah, or even insure
yeah.
them. I mean, a lot of my collectibles are covered under my homeowner's insurance, but you never know. Different states have different laws when it comes to that. And, I mean, that's the thing. We pay for an insurance company that's basically like, oh, you've got a claim, here's your check. That's what we like about them. They don't really quibble about anything. I wonder if they're going to be quibbling over the fact that I just submitted a claim for $9,000 worth of collectibles and hard-to-find shit. But, So, yeah, definitely folks out there, take inventory your stuff. I mean, my copy of The Tree by Raymond Buckland, thankfully, only the back cover and back couple of pages got any water on them. But this book, since it's the first U.S. edition, it's the first 80s edition of it. They put out the tree every few years. But this was a 1980 edition that I got signed by Ray, and I had to contact a book appraiser to figure out how much it was worth. And he says, oh, you got yourself about a $400 book there. And he said that was after the water damage. So, you know, look up your shit. But, but now I will open it up to questions about specific events and things that people are curious about. I will say that if people are wondering about the legal stuff, last night's episode of Rachel, go watch it on the website. She had Rachel Maddow's law school where she could actually ask lawyers technical questions about this stuff and get real answers. So it was of course, I find it fascinating, but I'm a geek. But seriously, if you're at all a geek about this stuff, check out Rachel's show from last night. It was really groovy. But now, questions. Anybody in the chat room? You got anything? Yeah.
I always have something. The chat room is quiet. It typically is on a Friday. People tend to listen to us on Sundays and Mondays and Wednesdays.
Oh, yeah.
Don't ask why. I don't know. But I'm glad that they listen at all. So, but I do have some questions, of course. So considering where we're at right now and, you know, the White House continuing to say, you know, I may get involved with the Justice Department, I may not, I may change my mind. What do you think the situation is going to be as far as the attempts to fire Mueller? Are we past that point already, or do you think he's going to make another stab at it?
You know, it's really tough to say because the dude's really capricious. He's really spontaneous. He can decide to do something at the spur of a moment and just attempt to do it. As long as he doesn't have Dobb again standing in his way again this time. But the thing is that, again, this is, again, something that could wind up testing. Let me tell you something. The time for him to try to fire Bob Mueller was about 6 months ago. It was 6 months ago because it wasn't 2018 yet. The thing that's going on here, and again, you know, people are saying, oh, the Republicans will never turn on Trump. And there are some Republicans who really never will turn on Trump because they're misogynistic, racist, homophobic assholes, and they've never had anybody that close to them in power. But there are plenty of the milquetoast Republicans, the ones who aren't necessarily Freedom Caucus jackasses. They're not liberal by any means. But these are folks who are in the most danger because a lot of the milquetoast Republicans tend to come from districts that aren't as deep red as the Freedom Caucus guys. And these are the districts that we consider how deeply red of districts in like Pennsylvania or Alabama Senate race. You see these cases where Republicans are losing. You're seeing a record pace of retirement from the Republican Congress. Paul fucking Ryan is leaving town rather than running for reelection again. And the ones that aren't running for the exits are really fucking worried. They're really worried. They're thinking that they've got to try to find a way to eke out a victory in the most hostile environment for a midterm election for the president's party in my lifetime. I mean, I don't think the midterms after Watergate were this hostile. Because at least in Watergate, you had some Republicans who were willing to stand up and do the right thing. But the thing is, a lot of these middle-of-the-road guys, and there's more of them than you'd think, the right-wing assholes soak up all the TV time, but there's a shit ton of middle-of-the-road guys who just want to cut taxes for rich people and go and, you know, serve some time before they go into some cushy lobbying job after they retire. They really don't want to have any sort of, you know, mouth breather revolution the way that the Trump people seem to want to. And these guys, their only defense for not standing up to Donald Trump and what he's doing to both the country and his own party, the only shield they've had to hide behind is Bob Mueller. They've been able to say, hey, you know what? Bob Mueller is a great man. He's a patriot. He served under Democrats and Republicans. The guy's he won medal after medal in Vietnam. This is a real patriot. He's looking into this, and I will wait for him to come to his conclusions before I comment on any of this Donald Trump stuff. And he's been their shield. I mean, for as much as some Republicans can't stand that Mueller's on the job, and they really can't stand it because they really do know him, and they know what kind of a straight arrow he is, and they know how there's no way to intimidate the man. They really don't like him being in there because he scares the shit out of them. But the thing is that a lot of the middle-of-the-road guys are using Mueller as a shield with their constituents, saying, hey, I'm not going to talk about this because there's a special prosecutor, the special counsel who's looking into this, and I'm just going to give this man room to finish the probe. And then, of course, someone say, I'm, of course, confident that the president will be exonerated or whatever. Depends on what district they live in. But they're still hiding behind Mueller. And if Trump does anything to try to sabotage Bob Mueller, even if it's going after Rod Rosenstein, these Republicans will be the ones that will all of a sudden act like Democratic senators. Their spines will turn to jelly. They will lose all sense of being able to stand up under their own power, because if you get rid of Bob Mueller, you've just gotten rid of their shield, and their constituents are going to expect accountability from them, and that's the last thing they want. They want to get reelected so that they can hopefully have a couple of years after Trump resigns to try to repair their party's image before they have to run again. And they're firing Bob Mueller or firing Rod Rosenstein would strip that shield away from these guys. And really, you know, these are the ones who really will make the decisions, because there aren't enough hardcore right-wing mouth breathers to be able to mount a defense by themselves. They need these middle-of-the-road guys to back them up in order to defend anything they're doing. And the middle-of-the-road guys are depending on Bob Mueller to be their shield. And that, you know, 6 months ago, outside of the election year, they could have thought, oh, well, he can fire him and it'll calm down by the time the election rolls around. Of course, these people have obviously never seen 10,000 women in pink pussy hats walking down the street, because you know what? Today's activists don't fucking forget, and we make sure that everybody fucking remembers. But anyway, But I'll tell you, did you see the video of Rod Rosenstein being asked about the people in the House that were trying to draw up impeachment papers against him?
Yeah, he
laughed. He's like, these guys can't even resist leaking their own drafts. And right there, you just saw through it. You saw through the government law enforcement professional. You saw the real guy. The real guy is just like, I can't believe these people. But and the fact that he just gave such a momentous smackdown. And even Jim Comey has said that firing Bob Mueller isn't going to stop this investigation. You'd have to fire the entire FBI and the entire Justice Department, because there are so many career people in these institutions that really take their pledge to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States against all threats, foreign and domestic.
And they believe
in their oath. They believe in their jobs. These people could be making a shit ton of money out in the private sector. They choose to stay in these government jobs because they think they can do some good. You'd have to fire 10,000 people in order to shut this down. And all that would open up. And I'm sure that that message is starting to get through to people like Mr. Flood, who is now trying to advise Donald. We'll see how long that lasts. Donald Trump, when he gets a real lawyer, doesn't tend to get to keep them very long. Because the reason why most lawyers won't represent him, because he won't listen and he won't pay. And the first one he won't listen is the big one here. Because most lawyers would take on defending a president just for the prestige of defending a president, and they wouldn't worry so much about getting paid. But the fact that the guy won't listen to their own advice, and he constantly goes around and stabs himself in the ass with a rusty dildo over and over again, really makes them not want to deal with it. But, you know, it's like the whole idea that, you know, you make a move against Rosenstein, you make a move against Mueller. Not only do you see those bills pass the House instantly, because even Paul Ryan wouldn't be able to stop these bills that are meant to protect the special counsel from being rammed through if that happened. Because, again, these milquetoast guys would be like, we can't protect you anymore. You took our shield away. Bob Mueller was the only thing standing between us and 10,000 angry constituents, and you took that away. We can't help you anymore. We've got to save our own asses. And I'm sure that's something that Donald Trump would really understand, is that, you know, hey, everybody's got to save their own ass, but that's what it would be like. So, he'll bluster because he'll try to intimidate. But again, mm-hmm. Bob Mueller is a guy who they offered him to cycle him back home during the Vietnam War. They said, okay, you served a tour. We're going to send you back to the States where you can serve on a military base in, you know, relative safety and, you know, and that kind of stuff. And he refused. He said, quite frankly, sir, I'd rather stay with my company here in Vietnam. And he volunteered to stay for two extra tours beyond his first one. So this is not a guy you can intimidate, okay? This is a guy who, you know, who basically wounded, saved half of his battalion by taking out a sniper, okay? This is not a guy you can intimidate. And if Trump thinks that he can bluster his way past this guy, you know, especially when you're ordering subpoenas by the gross, not going to happen. But I think that's Trump's ploy, is to try to threaten things, because when he threatens, Republicans try to mollify him and kowtow to him to make him happy so he doesn't do something stupid that's going to blow back on them. But it's only going to work for so long. Eventually it's going to be put up or shut up. And I think what's going to happen is right around the time he thinks, finally, I'm going to fire Bob Mueller, I think that's when the Southern District of New York comes back with a list of 20 indictments against Michael Cohen, but they're going to let him plead guilty to tax evasion with a maximum sentence of 5 years, because he's provided all of this great information on all this illegal shit that happened. And also, here's another thing to remember. Before anybody out there thinks, oh, well, these are federal crimes, Trump could try to pardon them, Bob Mueller's already ahead of you on this. Bob Mueller has been sharing stuff with Eric Schneiderman, the district attorney of the state of New York. The Southern District of New York shares information with the attorney general's office for the state of New York. This is standard practice. You know, when the feds come in and prove a case, they'll hand their evidence over to the locals so that they can prosecute too and stack even more of a prison sentence on these guys. So somebody gets 10 years in a federal pen, and then when they're done, they get to go and serve 20 years in a New York state pen. And all of these financial crimes were all committed in New York. All of Michael Cohen's worst stuff was committed in the state of New York. So even if Trump tried to pardon him, it's not going to work, because he can be indicted under state crimes, and presidential pardons do not do anything to state charges. They're powerless against them. As a matter of fact, Avenatti even had pulled out another piece of information showing that some of the money wired to Stormy Daniels came from a bank in San Francisco. Now, since it's looking like there's possible bank and wire fraud, Avenatti said that he has now given this information over to the attorney general in the state of California, someone who hates Trump just a little bit more than those women who are accusing him of grabbing them and groping them. The AG of the state of California hates him even more. So all of this stuff is getting handed off to him. So these guys are going to get hit from so many angles. Again, I still think, you know, that the only question I would have, is if they could get the state of, you know, if they could get the state of New York to go along with a deal to let Ivanka go in exchange for Trump resigning, I think they would, because I think in that deal, the state of New York would still go after Trump himself. So here's another prediction I'm going to give you. I think that if the world starts coming down on Donald Trump and he starts facing a shit ton of state charges, especially once he's out of office, I think the guy's going to flee to Russia. I really do. I think he's going to flee to Russia. He's going to take his money there. I think he would do that. I think he would take his family and run. He wouldn't take Melania, because Melania is never going to Russia, because she grew up in Eastern Europe. She knows what kind of bastards Russians are to people from where she comes from. But he'll take everyone else. Mm-hmm. I actually think Melania is going to divorce him before he leaves office, unless he resigns in the next year anyway. But I wouldn't be surprised if he fled to Russia after all is said and done, because He has properties in New York and Florida and California, and all those states are going to have a case against him.
Wow. Wow. That's pretty astounding.
Yeah. Yeah.
I have to say.
Tired of winning yet? Anyway.
Seriously.
Oh, my.
Well, listen,
oh, yes.
My friend, considering you are punchy and I had dental things done today, I'm going to suggest we wrap for the night. What do you think?
I am down with that. I've got to start a load of laundry. My wife and my son are going to Cedar Point's opening day tomorrow, so I've got to have clean clothes for my family, such as the life of a house husband. And I really – let me just say one other thing here. Any guys out there who are looking at a situation where their wife can earn more money, but you want to have one of you stay at home with the kids, be a house husband. It's fucking awesome. Yeah, I'm washing dishes and cleaning the house and doing laundry and all that shit, but I get to hang out with my kids all day. What's fucking better than that? But anyway.
That's awesome. That's awesome.
I will leave you guys on that.
All right. Taliesin Govanen, the pagan pundit himself, thank you so much. Everybody,
Sis
and I will be back next week. Until then, have a wonderful week, and we will see you soon. Good night, everybody.
Good night. See you next time. Same bat time, same bat station. Taliesin out.
All right. And with that, I am out too. Good night, everybody.